Yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Our jam around here is to find the coolest people in dentistry to share some insights and their stories with you on the podcast to help you improve your practice and your life. And I've got a great one today. Today, you're going to meet a woman who started as a dental hygienist. Then she became a prosthodontist. Then she became a practice owner. Then she became the editor of Dental Economics. And she built her ideal team and practice culture with a ton of adversity. She did it unapologetically. Her name is Dr. Pam Maragliano. And you're going to hear her story today. It's powerful. So please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this. And we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. You know the jam here. My job is to find the coolest people in dentistry and have them share some thoughts, some of their stories to help you think bigger and better about your practice. And I have a new friend today who I've been introduced to by David Harris, who's a good friend of mine, who's been on the podcast many times. He said to me, you got to have Pam on your show. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. So here it is. I've got Dr. Pam Maragliano on the show. Hey. Did I say that right? I want to make sure I said that right.
You did. Yes, you did. Amazing.
Yeah. Now, you are amazing. And this is what we're going to unpackage today. You have an amazing story. You know, you went from hygienist to prosthodontist to influencer. You're also wearing a lot of hats. One, including the editor of Dental Economics for the last 4 years. But let's start here. I want to start here because I have so many questions I want to ask you. Like, tell us a little bit about your story. I have a lot of dental students and younger listeners, and I always want them to know who they're listening to before we get started. So tell us a little bit of your story.
Sure. Okay. So before I tell you my story, I feel like I have to, if you've got younger listeners, you guys just like be open for the ride. Okay. Like before I even tell you about my story, I feel like just be open-minded and just be down for kind of what things, you know, get presented to you, because I can tell you that none of this was by design. And I feel like I've been very lucky, probably in the right place at the right time, or maybe great timing for certain things, but none of this was by design. So it just is what it is. So I was in college and I wanted to play hockey, or have no idea what I wanted to do, or hang out with my friends. And my dad was like, nope, can't do that. You need to have a job to fall back upon. I don't want you to ever have to depend on a man. So you need to become a dental hygienist. And so super weird. He was not in the dental industry. He made my sister become a dental hygienist. So she's a hygienist somewhere. And so I was like, okay, I mean, I guess so. So I didn't realize how hard it is to get into dental hygiene school. So I applied, kind of hoping I wasn't going to get in so I could just keep doing what I was doing. And I got right into dental hygiene school and I became a hygienist. What I found interesting when I was there was that I felt like I was going to school with a purpose. I feel like prior to hygiene school, everything you're learning is kind of didactic or historical or whatever. And I just felt like learning something so practical was really interesting and important. And I also felt that if I was learning something with the goal of putting my hands on another individual,
right,
I better take it seriously. So I went from, you know, just kind of doing whatever in college to now being more serious and more interested in what I was doing. And I fell in love with it. And so I needed to go get a bachelor's degree because, after all, it was my fallback upon job. I got my bachelor's in dental hygiene and then started practicing when I was here in Massachusetts. And I started practicing as a hygienist while I was getting my bachelor's, and I was introduced to prosthodontics. I also worked for a general dentist that, let's just say, maybe wasn't the best dentist on the planet. And so me having no dental experience, I felt if I was going to consider dental school, I need to be like them, not like them. And right. So I felt if I become a dentist, I must become a prosthodontist. That's the only option. And so I went into dental school with the full intention of becoming a prosthodontist, which I did, but hygiene never really left me. And so I feel like I'll always have this soft spot or priority in my practice for hygiene and prevention and long-term outcomes and periodontal health during restorative procedures and after, and, you know, maintenance and all of those things. And so for me, I feel like it was really, it's always been a thing. And then in 2010, we had created protocols in our practice to prevent tooth decay. And the protocols, we kind of morphed the 2007 October-November California Dental Association Journal, their protocols for caries management or Canberra. We kind of morphed it into something that was a little bit easier and more maybe streamlined, if you would, for private practice. And we presented that at the American Dental Association meeting where we were awarded the Adult Preventive Care Practice of the Year.
That's awesome.
Thank you. It was, again, we just wanted a little plaque for the wall so we could tell our patients, like, look, this is legit. And that really started my lecture career and my writing career. And believe me, I never ever intended or wanted to lecture in front of anybody, whether it's 10 or 1,000 people. And, but I felt like I'm not going to say no because I'm afraid of it.
Right.
I would say no if I can't do it or I don't want to do it. But if my reason is fear, then I have to do it because obviously that's, you know, you have to. So I started lecturing and writing and all of those things. And then opportunities on the industry side of things came up. And I started with dentistryiq.com with a, you know, I was a co-editorial director with Josh Austin on Pearls for Your Practice on dentistryiq.com. And then, you know, one thing led to another. And here I am with dental economics. So I split my time now between my practice and DE.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So you're in Salem, Massachusetts. You have a practice there. And hygienist to prosthodontist. What was the one big thing that you didn't plan on or the biggest obstacle? You know, that's a pretty good journey. That's an amazing journey, actually. You know, what's the one thing you didn't bargain for to take that journey from hygienist to prosthodontist?
You know, from hygienist to prosthodontist, I feel like was, for me, it didn't seem weird or unusual or anything like that. You know, it was nice because in dental school, faculty or administration would say, oh, we love hygienists. And so I felt like, oh, this was a good transition. And I think it's almost more expected to become a periodontist or something like that after hygiene. And so I don't think they really saw a lot of hygienists turn into prosthodontists. But I'd say the one thing that was probably the biggest obstacle than anything else was to go from hygienist, prosthodontist, whatever, to practice owner. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably the biggest obstacle because there are a lot of factors that come in, from managing your debt to you now have a vested interest in the treatment plans that you're presenting, managing the team, and also having the confidence to do so. And I can tell you that I was out for a few years. I was out for, I think, 7 years before, something like that, before I bought my practice. And it was challenging. And it's been a ride. For me, actually, tomorrow's my 11th year anniversary in my practice.
Wow. Congratulations. How cool is that?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you and I had a chance to just chat in our pre-show conversation, and you have a unique philosophy, you know, and with dentistry evolving, you get to see so many things, especially in your role in dentistry. You use the word tooth preservation, you know, preserving tooth structure, which is counterintuitive a lot of times when you're thinking about prosthodontists. And you and I talked about this before, is, you know, we used to think whoever did the most dentistry, you know, made sometimes the biggest impact, maybe made the most money, maybe was most successful. And now you're very much, your philosophy has coalesced into something about, you know, around long-term outcomes. Can you just tell us a little bit more about what that means? Give us some perspective.
I would say if I'm going to generalize what my treatment planning style is, I would say it's appropriate treatment planning. Certainly, I'm not a one-trick pony when it comes to things. I also feel that if we can preserve tooth structure, we know nothing lasts forever in dentistry for the most part, except for maybe an extraction. You know what I mean? Nothing lasts forever. And so I feel like, gosh, especially the younger the patient, or, you know, even thinking about the life cycle of people, and people are living longer. If we can preserve tooth structure and save us some time or some effort or some tooth structure for the replacement of what we're doing today, I think we're doing a real service for patients. And also, gosh, I mean, think about how I would want to be treated is if there's an early lesion on my tooth and I can treat that through risk management and maybe changing some products that I'm using and having some professional applications during my hygiene visits versus scheduling a separate appointment, getting my tooth drilled into. And when we know the lifespan of composites aren't amazing, you know, a class two is going to last you what, you know, 5-10-ish years. I mean, you know, it's only going to get bigger and bigger as we go.
Right.
If we can preserve that, we're really doing a service for people. And I don't know, I like to sleep at night and I like to really feel good about what I'm doing. And it's also a democracy. It comes down to education and providing options for your patients and making sure that your patient is in the right place. Because obviously sometimes my values and the patient's values don't align, mm-hmm. and they might be better served somewhere else.
Right. Right. And that's hard. It's hard to say no to people, especially when you have a business and it counts on patients. I have so many questions I want to ask you because, again, you're privy to so this, you know, as we shoot this podcast, it's July 31st, 2025. You've watched a lot of trends. You've held a very important position for 4 years. Where is dentistry right now from your perspective? And what are some of the trends that you're seeing?
So dentistry right now is really interesting because I feel like we have a few, let's call them challenges or obstacles or however you want to call it. But I feel like there's this private practice, independent owner situation coupled with this influx of DSOs. And I think that in some ways, I mean, I'm a private practice owner. I have two associates in my practice, but I'm the only owner, small practice, 4 operatories. And I think a lot of us feel threatened by right. DSOs. If a DSO is scooping up a practice down the street or opening up a new location somewhere, I think that there's this concern, like they're coming up and like eating up all the dental practices and the patients. And I don't think that's the case. However, I do think that we're going to see kind of more polarization in dentistry where there's the PPO style practices or maybe some of the practices that DSOs kind of fall into. And then there's going to be the more boutique, you know, individualized treatment plan kind of practices. And the ones that are kind of in the middle that are sort of trying to do both of them are probably going to get a little bit lost. And I think they're going to struggle the most. Right. So I think that unapologetically deciding how you want to practice, because both models actually can be quite successful, quite lucrative, quite satisfying. It just depends on how you want to do it.
Right.
But I feel like if you're trying to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you're going to get lost. And I think your patients are going to get confused.
Yeah. I love how you said that, unapologetically, because I believe that to be true too. And if I'm a young dentist listening, let's say I'm 28 and I'm like, Pam, I totally get it. Why is this so hard? Speak to me. Like, what are the, you mentioned running a business, getting out into the real world. No one tells you this stuff. You have to have difficult conversations. You got to make decisions. Take us through that process for you. Like, you know.
Wow. Well, okay. So I bought my practice in 2014 and I'm Italian. Like, I'm like not the type that's like going to come in and like clean house and fire everybody. Like, right. I'm like, no. Like, I can merge onto the highway. I'm a middle child. Like, I can, you know, make myself fit in places. And basically what I did was made everybody else comfortable at the cost of my comfort and my value system. And so I felt like it was sort of like the asylum was run by the inmates, right. where I was told, you know, if I wanted to bring something new in, it's like, no, this is how we've always done it. You know, and I just sort of let it happen that way. And I felt like I didn't think things were going the way they should go. I always felt like kind of a loser when I'd meet every year with my accountant because my practice wasn't growing the way that I'd want it to. And look, we're all overachievers. Like, we wouldn't have gone to dental school if we didn't kind of have an expectation of putting in your efforts and your time and seeing the results on the other end of it. So here I am spending all this time on my practice and not really enjoying it. I didn't really enjoy my team. I felt like I was kind of frustrated and I didn't see my practice growing, but I went into it with the best of intentions and expectations. Like I thought, gosh, I'm going to have the best like preventive restorative practice on the North Shore of Boston. Like that's going to be me and I'm going to do it. And it wasn't that way. And for me, it took the pandemic for me to just have some time off where I could reflect on my practice. And I realized I was not happy. And I realized that what I got into and what was the actual reality of my practice, they really weren't aligned at all. And so it took that level of frustration and that amount of time for me to finally do something about it.
Yeah.
I had a chat with Alan Mead and I love him. And he was like, for you to make a change, it has to hurt enough.
Right.
You know what I mean? Regardless of what that change is, you have to, it's like gotta hurt enough for you to finally do something. And I felt like for me, it was the pandemic. And so although I had no idea we were going to embark on this like crazy staffing crisis that we're still dealing with all these years later, I got rid of my entire clinical team and decided to start over. It was me and my office manager and that was it. And I was like, we're just going to start over. Yeah. And thank God we did, because my practice now is unrecognizable to what it was when I first bought it. And patients have responded so favorably. And I love being there. I feel like if you can wake up every day and look forward to seeing the people that you're with, and I mean, obviously not every day is like rainbows and unicorns, but I feel like for the most part, if I wake up every single day and I'm happy to spend my day where I'm spending it, I think that's a win. And I can say that that's where I'm at this point.
Yeah. Go back to that during the pandemic, because I completely agree with you. It was a hard moment for a lot of us, myself included. I had a panic attack and I learned there are some things I wanted that I don't want anymore. And it crystallized even for us. What were some of the things you said, I'm not going back to the way it used to be? What were some of the like non-negotiables for you?
Well, I felt like I was off and I had time. I mean, I did work for Endeavor. So I was, you know, working with Dentistry IQ and DACE at the time. So it's not like I was doing nothing, but I was off from the practice. And so, you know how it was, like we're all scrambling to find like face shields and right. like plastic gowns and like all of this stuff and change your protocols. And I was like, gosh, if I'm doing all of these things, I want to come back better than I left my practice in March. And it was interesting that my team was so disengaged that I would have meetings, like we'd meet on Zoom and we'd, you know, my office manager and I would tell my hygienist and my assistants about like what we were doing and like some of the new protocols that we were putting together. And like people would show up in the meeting with like their bathing suit on, and like one would be like talking about their cat and one would be like home, but like scrubbing their credit cards, like their credit card is going to have COVID, like COVID's going to jump into their wallet or something. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like here we are educating people, educating ourselves. And I'm here trying to get protocols going with people who just don't care.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? If you don't care, I don't care. And I care. So if you like, it just isn't going to work anymore. And so I had this moment, and I mean this with like all due respect, because I know it sounds really mean, but I had a call with my office manager and I was like, I would be better off if I never saw their faces again. And they were not part of this team. And I knew that it had to change. It wasn't anymore, you know, I just felt like if, and these people were in the practice for, I mean, one of them was there for like 30 years and the other one was there for like 15-ish years. And I was like, if patients are mad at me, I don't care. You can go too. Everybody can go. I just need my practice to be better. And I can't apologize for taking the steps to make my practice better anymore. Right. And I can't sit here and let these protocols, you know, these old protocols take over when I know better.
Right.
And so I just couldn't do it anymore. And so for me, that was it. And I was like, I don't care what happens. It is what it is. It's time to attract my kind of people because I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. So what'd you do? Take us through that. Like fresh out of COVID, how did you do that? What steps did you take?
So when we were starting to get back to patient care with COVID, you could see emergent or potentially emergent procedures. And so my office manager was kind of doing it all. She was assisting me and she was doing managerial things. And so she was like, let's just get rid of everybody. And she's like, I'll just keep assisting you and we'll just like figure it out until we find the right people. And so thankfully I've got friends in the hygiene industry. So once I got rid of my hygienist, I called a friend and I was like, hey, you know anybody? She's like, hold please. And she sent me two amazing hygienists to meet. One I hired, and my primary qualification, if you would, is I want you to want to work here. If you want to work here, I want you. And so one really wanted to work with me and I was like, that's it. That's the one. And so we went with, her name's Sarah. She's awesome. You should have her on your podcast. She's incredible. She's the past president of the Mass Dental Hygienist Association. She's a trainer for EMS Dental. She's like pushing the Botox bill through for hygienists. Like she's like a real go-getter. Amazing. And she was kind of the catalyst to kind of like revamp my whole perio program. And so I also just kind of sight unseen, no team ready to go, I decided to invest in guided biofilm therapy, GBT. And so I sort of like had this whole thing ready to go, but like didn't really have the team in place for it. So when Sarah joined me, I was like, we trained Sarah. I'm like, all right, this is how we do things. And that's just it. And she was like, okay. And it was a whole new approach. And so thankfully she embraced it. Thankfully, she fit in. We definitely had kind of a revolving door of assistance for a while. But my feeling is like, it has to be the right people. And I think creating a mission, I know it sounds kind of maybe trivial or not necessary, but I created a mission and a vision for my practice. A mission is something you can share with your patients, hang in your waiting room, whatever website. The vision is kind of an internal document that your team needs to see. And, I can tell you that it was vulnerable. It was hard. I really wanted to write what was in my heart about what I wanted my practice to look like. And I didn't care who I hired as long as they valued the same things I valued. And so I have them look at it. I have them read it. I look at their face while they're reading it. Are they like rolling their eyes? Or are they grinning and like nodding, you know? And having people with shared values is everything. And wasting your time with, you know, the negative people or the people who are just sort of a warm body, they got to go.
Yeah. Okay. That you're saying one of my favorite things of all time, because I experienced the same journey. And when you say values, I want you to go a little bit deeper with that, because I have been on the same journey. Now, I'll give you a little glimpse, because you and I don't know each other and I'm burying my soul in the podcast. Before the pandemic, I was an okay to poor leader. I mean, very excited about what we do. And I lost four key people in, during, and after the pandemic, who were great people, but the culture wasn't the best around here. And what I know now is I wasn't unapologetic about where we were going. I was wishy-washy. And so with that come circumstances where people fight, they get out, you know, you get this unrest where people are very unhappy and you're like, I'm doing everything to make you guys happy. And you guys are so unhappy and I'm so miserable trying to make you happy. Now, it's not that what I learned was it wasn't their fault. It was my fault. I had talked about values. I didn't put the flag in the ground. Coming out of COVID, we put the flag in the ground and I said, we are going this way. And I used the word value so many times, people were like, okay, now I want you to go there because I use it all the time. What does that mean? Like, you know, I love what you said about mission, but when I talk mission and values, they go, oh gosh, here he goes again with this whole mission value. What did it mean to you?
So there's a few things it means to me. So one thing that I thought was really cool is I also redid my website at that time. Mm-hmm. And my web designer was like, I need you to define your practice in three words. And I was like, what? You can't like, what? And so it was, again, really hard. I wanted to like dig deep and think really hard. And so my three words is excellence. No matter how simple the case, no matter how busy you are when you pick up the phone, excellence in everything that we do, no matter how simple or how difficult. Evolution, We will never, I will almost fire you if you're like, this is how we've always done it. So this is what we're going to do. Like, I literally can't deal with that at all. So evolution, we will always be continually striving to make ourselves better, whether it's us personally, professionally, technologically, whatever it is, we're always moving forward. We're never just going to sit back and just like plop around our practice ever. And then love, you know, you got to put a little love into it. You got to love what you do. You got to love who you work with. You got to love your role. You've got to love your patients, love on them, you know, because if you don't put a little love into what you do, it's just mechanical and it sucks. And, you know, so like those were kind of like kind of turned into my core values. Actually, when my practice turned 10 last year, I bought everybody these gold necklaces that say love on them.
I love it.
And yeah, thank you. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel when it comes to your mission and your values, I mean, I feel like obviously we all want to be the best dentist in our area and we want to make our patients comfortable and be inclusive and do those things. But I feel like you have to align with what you want. You know, for me, especially with my role in the dental industry, being willing to try new things, new products. I mean, I'm sure you get new products sent to you all the time that you have to play with. If you have an assistant that's like, nope, we're only using this bonding agent. I'm throwing out anything else that shows up. It's just work.
Yeah.
And so I have, you know, I have people that are willing to pivot with me and will, you know, when a new product comes, my assistants actually open up the IFU and read it. And, you know, so we can play with it. And it's not weird for my team or my patients for us to pick up a camera. You know, I feel like, you know, because there is a little overlap in my little dental lives, I need people that will overlap with me, you know, and I want them to want to work at the maximum level of what their license will allow. I don't think assistants are just spit suckers and operatory cleaners, you know, and same thing with hygienists. You know, if you're working, just seeing patients every 6 months and you're just sort of accepting inflammation and disease and whatever, it's not good for the business. It's not good for the patient. It's not good for your restorative outcomes. It's not good for anybody. So we really need to be better and not just accept some of the things that have become acceptable in dentistry. And one of the big ones is inflammation. And we just sort of, you know, everybody bleeds a little bit, you know, and brush and floss and see you in 6 months. Bye. You know, like that's not what we should be doing. I mean, we're healthcare providers.
Right.
I feel like, would your doctor be happy if like you touched your leg and it just spontaneously bled? And they're like, it's not that much bleeding. So, you know, come back when your leg's about to fall off. Like nobody does that. Right. And yet we do that in dentistry. And I think we can and should be better.
Yeah. Boy, this is a big conversation too, because I want to come back to the inflammation thing. But let me ask you one question about what you just said. You know, you mentioned Sarah. You mentioned, you know, you have a really good team now. Agree? Like,
yes.
I think a lot of people listening to this would say, Pam, I want the same thing, but you don't get it. I practice in an area where we can't find people. They can't answer. You get to see all these things. People probably email you about the same things. And actually, you know, there's so many studies saying that more than 60% of dentists say that the number one challenge they will have for the rest of their career is finding the right people. I think a lot of people listening to this want what you have. But Pam, I don't have that here. What do you say to them? You know, type of
don't thing. Stop looking.
Ooh, like, I like that.
Me.
Yeah.
I kissed a lot of frogs. Trust me. I had hygienists that didn't belong here. Absolutely did not belong here. I had, you know, I had it all. I mean, we've all done it. I mean, I had an assistant that I don't know why she was so scared of me and she was like shaking to hand me things like, you know, it's just not going to work. You know, I had an, you know, we've all like, I had an assistant that was, she was a stripper. And so, and not that I have a problem with that because I don't, but the way she would talk to patients was a little it would make me uncomfortable. And I was like, this isn't. And when I would try to talk with her about how I like to see things done, her response is, yeah, I know you're extra. And I was like, okay, here we go. You know, don't stop looking, you know, whether it means looking at the local restaurant for somebody who has an amazing personality or somebody in a store or on Indeed or one of these job boards that are out there. don't stop looking. I'm not saying you have to like do what I did. I mean, I didn't know that we were going to have this whole thing. So when I just sort of like cleaned house and got rid of everybody and decided to start over, I certainly wouldn't have done that. If I, right. you know, I probably would have been a little bit more cautious and tried to have somebody lined up to move forward. So, you know, that, you know, get involved, go to study clubs, go to your local dental hygiene conferences, because everybody wants to find a place where they fit. And while you might have the team that doesn't fit in your practice, the person who fits in your practice might not fit in the practice that's in the town next door.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you just have to always keep looking. And at this point, I would say I'm slightly overstaffed because I'd never want to be understaffed again. And I get right. that. I also participate in, there's a high school assisting program where we help mentor an assisting student as she, so far it's been she's, as they navigate and go through their high school program. And so far, every last one of them wants to be a dental hygienist. And so I'm hoping one, once she finishes hygiene school, will come back and join us. We'll make room for her because we love her. You know, there's different ways to do that. You know, invite people to come shadow, invite, you know, you, unfortunately, you've got to be a little social. They're not just going to just like show up in your, at your front door.
Right.
And so, and also ask your hygienist, ask, you know, say, look, we're growing. We need to find somebody. You know, if you have somebody who has a great personality, ask them if they have any friends that we could, you know, train or bring up the ranks or whatever. You just have to always have your eyes open and you got to keep looking. And I would just say, gosh, don't give up, because it's so costly, whether it's emotionally costly or financially costly, to have the wrong people in place. But it's so abundantly special to have the right people in your office every single day, and people who help one another, people who aren't too smug to roll up their sleeves. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I say is, gosh, I've cleaned the bathroom probably more than everybody combined.
Right.
So there's really no job that everybody shouldn't be okay doing. You know, like there's some that are kind of not the best, like, I don't know, whatever. But I feel like, you know, we all work together. You know, if somebody needs help, even me, I would help them. You know, it's just one of those things that you have to kind of be part of the team.
Yeah.
You have to always be looking for the right people to join you.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think when you have right people, right seats, you should also have a bench, because you're going to be growing. Now, growth doesn't mean like bigger and monster. You're going to need people that are more talented because you have higher expectations. And I think this would be true for you, is that when you went through this moment, sometimes a dentist will listen to this and say, well, I have 13 people. Like, where am I going to find 13? And I always tell them, you got to start with one. Maybe it's called the Sarah effect for you. But I think Sarah, as you started talking about your mission, you're like, she helped you maintain that and get clear about who else we can add to this. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So my story is a little bit different, but it's not that different. I hope everybody has a ride or die in their practice. For me, it's my office manager. She's like, if I could pick a little sister, like it would be her.
Right.
And she is just that person that I know I can rely on her. I can depend on her. She's just so trustworthy. God, I mean, anything. She's awesome. So obviously, it's nice to have another pair of eyes on somebody that you're interviewing or somebody that you're considering for your practice. At this point in hygiene, I don't even play that big of a role. I'd be like, Brittany, Sarah, go meet them. And if you want me to meet them, I'll meet them. But if you don't think it's worth my time meeting them, I'm not going to. And so like now I have kind of an infrastructure built in that I don't even have to do all of that legwork. So yeah. So I actually had a friend, and that's the other thing. Talk to your friends.
Right.
I had a friend in Nashville who said, I have a hygienist that's moving to Boston. And I told her there's only one practice that she can work in. And I said, okay. And I wasn't even sure I was ready for another hygienist, but he was like, figure it out, hire her. She's amazing, whatever. And I was like, okay. And this poor girl moved south of Boston And if you are familiar with Boston, Salem is not easy to get to, and it's kind of annoying, especially for anything south of Boston going to the north of Boston. Like, nobody wants to do that. She commutes all the way up there to be part of my team because we love her. She fits in. She's ho at home here. And, it's part of the dental family. And so I went from Sarah to Sarah and Beth. And I met Beth literally through a friend of mine. And then Sarah was at an MDHA event where she met two hygienists who wanted to come and shadow. They came and shadowed, and they're like, "We want to work here." And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, can I fit two more hygienists up in here?" And we decided to make it happen. And so, again, it was my hygienist and her networking where she was like, "I think we should hire them. They're great." And I was like, "Okay, let's figure it out." And so, you have to be a little creative with the schedule and the chairs and all of the things. But I went from one hygienist in, I don't know, to two, then boom, to four. And I really saw my whole hygiene department boom, blossom. But I think also utilizing guided biofilm therapy, the approach is very similar. So while they have different personalities and they jive differently with different patients, the care that they're getting, the patients that they're getting is the same, regardless of who they see. And so that's really nice because it's part of your branding and part of where what you're doing in your practice. Not, oh, this one likes the Cavitron, but this one likes hand scaling. And so when you go to this one, it's different versus that one. It's like, nope, this is what we do at Salem Dental Arts, and this is how we do it. And so you might prefer this hygienist over that hygienist or the schedule, whatever. The care is still top level, and I feel really good about that.
Yeah. And you mentioned how you felt before COVID. Now that you've done all of this work, how does it feel going to work now?
It's amazing, and it's so much less stressful. Like, I just go in and I get to do dentistry, like, which is what we all kind of just want to do. And so it's amazing because I don't have to stay till 7 o'clock running reports. I can, pull my office manager and be like, "We need to sit down and talk about where we are with our goals and with whatever." And she creates the goals. I mean, part of this is having people that you trust and giving them the autonomy to do what they can do. And so I feel like if I have somebody that can do all of these things, and actually she's become an investigator for David Harris of all, so she's
Wow.
kind of, yeah. So today, July 31st, she was like, "You better get to the bank because I need the deposits to all match up." And I'm like, "Okay, boss, I got you." It's great to have somebody who cares as much as I do. They care about different things, but this way there's just a level of care for the practice, and the care is coming from different angles. So I get to focus on dentistry and my labs and communicating with my specialists and making sure that everything's up to date while keeping Brittany in the loop. But she's doing the financial things, and we're in the loop together there. But then I've got my hygienists that are trying new products, kind of tweaking protocols, salivary testing, all of the things. And we're still in the loop on it so that we can get new protocols going. And the assistant's the same thing. So it's just kind of like we're different cogs, but the machine is all heading in the same direction. And for me, it's just so much less stressful, so much more fun. I look forward to every team member. I don't care what combination there is. How like you don't want to have lunch at this time if you're sitting there with that person,
Right.
like that kind of thing. It's not like that. It's like any combination of my team when they're together, I hear laughter.
Yeah.
If I'm not, in the lunchroom and I'm in my office doing something, I hear them laughing. I hear them happy. And for me, that's really so important because, at the end of the day, we have to love what we do. We have to enjoy what we do. If you're stressed or unhappy, there's no way you're doing your best work.
Right. Pam, I'm so happy for you. That is so cool. I'm going to have you back. We're going to talk about the inflammation thing because that's a whole nother episode right there. I also going to have you back and just how you think about your hygiene department. I want to do a couple things. I want people to learn more about you and what you do. But before that, let's put a final bow on this. Let's, give us some final thoughts on all the thoughts that we just shared with our listeners today.
I would say, number one, be open to and enjoy the ride for your career. I feel like, you know, you think you go into dentistry to sit in the same chair for the next 35 years in the same four walls. Dentistry offers a lot of opportunities that might spark a passion in you that you didn't even know existed. So be open to it. And I think that you might find career beats a path or it doesn't, but it might solidify the path that you're on. But I think being open to that journey is really important. I think also sometimes taking time to decide professionally what's important to you, whether it's clinical or whatever capacity that you're in dentistry or dental hygiene, finding what's most important to you and running towards it, because you'll find that you'll attract the people that are with you. And instead of feeling like you're swimming upstream or you're doing something and nobody really gets you, once you have those people that get you and get what you're doing, all of a sudden, like everything gets better and easier and so much more fun. And I just wish for you all to love dentistry as much as I do, because to be honest with you, I do love it with my whole heart. And I couldn't do what I do if I didn't love it. And so I just wish that for everybody out there.
Yeah, Pam, that is so awesome. I love your passion around it. I love the way you think about this. It's so great. Now, I want people to also follow you and watch what you're doing. So if I want to learn more about what you do, who you are, where do I go?
Anywhere on social media, probably Instagram, I would say at Dr. Pamela underscore Maragliano. And that's probably the easiest place. I would say you can follow our podcast at Dentistry Unmasked. So me and David Rice have a podcast, which is super fun. And then what else do we do? And Dental Economics, at Dental Economics Official. You can subscribe to the magazine. You can get it at print, or don't worry, you can get it digital. It's available every type of way that you would like it. And if you have suggestions, questions, anything, please hit me up. I'm always happy to help or take criticism or, get a high five, whatever you have for me.
That's awesome. Pam, thank you so much for being on. I really enjoyed that. Like, it was awesome. I love hearing your story. And I know that a lot of people that are listening are going to be inspired by your story. And I have so much more I want to learn from you. So that was awesome. So let's stick around while I say goodbye to everybody else. Is that okay?
Of course.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. It's a cool story. Very inspiring. And if you're unapologetic about where you want to go, you find the right type of people. I'm telling you, what Pam said can totally happen for you. You could enjoy going to work again, and it'll bring your best workout. So I love hearing stories like that. So keep bringing it. Keep sending us suggestions for things you guys want to see. We're going to keep bringing more and more episodes to you. And we just want to thank you guys for showing up. So thanks for showing up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. And until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.